Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Show me his milk, raisin in the grass.
This is the last week of this song. This song's going on hiatus. Mike Jacobson's favorite song from when before he was born. My people would like some of our music. 6:10 in the morning. Hi, I'm Steve. Dave's back. Welcome back, Dave.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be back.
Did you have a nice time with your father?
I had a very nice time, yes.
You guys chased chicks?
No, we're both attached, so.
Yeah, that's not what I said. Did you guys chase chicks?
Chase chicks, no. Oh. We did not, sorry.
Nice weather in South Florida?
It was beautiful.
Yeah?
It was no complaints.
Did you enjoy not wearing pants?
I wore shorts.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time. It's going to get colder here late in the week, but 40s throughout the week. And every day you chip away, you're getting closer to spring. So you got that going for you. We are 3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers.
Unbelievable.
How about that? Yeah, pitchers and catchers report in 3 weeks. That, of course, is your first real domino to fall that the winter's over. At 6:11, let's get going here with the top six at six.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGN.
First off, I want to make a commitment to you. I can't commit that we'll play the most music because, you know, we don't really play music. I can't commit to you that we'll be commercial free because, you know, the commercials pay the bills. You know what I can't commit to you? We will be your alternative facts leader. Okay. We will be on this show. We will have more alternative facts than anybody else. I'm committing that to you now because I believe in alternative facts. You got your facts.
Yeah.
This is your facts. Uh-huh. By the way, I was texting with Chuck Todd after the interview.
Oh, I can't.
His head exploded.
Oh, I can't wait to talk to him on Thursday.
So you have your facts, and then you have your alternative facts. No, you don't. You can only have one set of facts. Facts are facts.
How about people all over the country?
It's not like right and then another right, yeah. Or left and then another left.
People all over the country hearing that saying, ah, oh, there we go. Were you out with the guys last night? Well, yes, I was. Is that an alternative fact? Well, yes, it is.
That's the great danger, and it goes backwards to Sean Spicer's appearance on Saturday night when the little fire hydrant that could came out as Trump's press secretary in his first appearance officially in the gig in front of the media he'll deal with every day, and he lied to their faces. Now, right. That's a problem. That's a problem because your relationship to these people is crucial. And again, just a weekend of missed opportunities for Trump. Starting with a speech on Friday, which painted a picture of a country. I've never visited the country he painted.
I agree.
The American carnage. I've been in downtown Detroit. It never looked like carnage to me. It looked like people in a bad way that were trying to get their way out of the bad way. You know, I wouldn't call the worst neighborhoods in this city or in Los Angeles or in New York or in Dallas or in Miami. I wouldn't call it carnage. I would call it a lot of people in a bad way because of a few people taking advantage of them. Carnage is just an awful, awful word.
Right. And plus, isn't the inauguration speech supposed to be a rah-rah speech?
Well, that's regardless of what it's supposed to be, I don't live in the same America as Mr. Trump does. The alternative facts included a Saturday night stop or Saturday afternoon stop at the CIA where Mr. Trump stood in front of the wall of the fallen. These are 100-plus stars of all the CIA agents, some of which names you'll never know, who have died protecting this country. He talked about how many times he'd been on the cover of Time magazine. I can't blame all of this on Trump. He has five key advisors. He's got Reince Priebus as chief of staff. He's got Kellyanne Conway. He's got Steve Bannon, who, by the way, wrote that American Carnage speech. Yeah. He's got Jared Kushner and who am I missing?
Well, Sean Spicer.
And Sean Spicer. Sean Spicer would be the fifth.
Yeah.
Those people have to get to him and tell him no. No. Mm-hmm. They have to tell him when you stand in front of the wall of stars at the CIA, don't talk about yourself. Don't. Talk about the CIA. They have to tell them when you tweet out about women protesting from Sea to Shining Sea, it's not the right time to say, did they vote?
It's also not the right time to say, I didn't get the point. Oh, that was Kellyanne. She didn't see the point of it.
Yeah, that wasn't the Trump. The Trumpster, by the way, eventually yesterday did put out a tweet that said, even if I don't agree with them, they have a right to protest. I believe at some point Ivanka must have gotten in his ear and yelled at him. Mm-hmm. So not a good weekend, not a good first weekend for Donald Trump. And the idea that this constant harangue, and Reince Priebus as well, this harangue that the media is trying to delegitimize the president. Nobody in major media has time to delegitimize the president. There's not a big meeting where CNN calls MSNBC and they call Fox. And by the way, Fox yesterday slamming Reince Priebus as well. Let me tell you something. You lose Fox, if you're a Republican president, you lose Fox, that's a bad day. Those three networks don't get together with the three broadcast networks. They don't get together with every major market radio show in the country, including this one. They don't get together and go, okay, here's what we're going to do this week to Trump. Everybody's just doing their job.
Yeah.
The Trump spokespeople at this point, they would like Mr. Trump not to be judged on what he says, but to be judged on what they wish he would say. Don't judge him on what he says. Judge him on what we're going to try to get him to say later. It's insane.
Yeah, and to come out and start telling lies during a press conference, you know how dangerous that is?
Your first press conference.
Steve, what if he comes out tomorrow and says, we've obliterated ISIS? You're at a press conference. You are taking any press conference in the world, you're taking what is being presented to you as a fact, and then you're going to report it.
Well, it also goes to the military that he commands. Oh. If the military that he commands can't trust him, then you better make sure that the order of those that are beneath you, the generals, the admirals and such, have control over those men. You're creating problems on every single level of this gigantic government that you run simply because you're so insecure. You had to throw out a story about how many people were at your march. And by the way, there was no story there. Nobody expected Donald Trump to have a larger crowd than Barack Obama had in 2009. Nobody.
No.
Barack Obama in 2009 was a historical figure, the first black president in this country. Of course he had a huge crowd. It's understandable. It's understandable that people were there. Trump had tons of people there. I never even would have thought it was a story until those two photos showed up and then Donnie had a temper tantrum.
Right. Well, then when they asked the Park Service to take the picture down, too.
Well, the Park Service shouldn't be. But the Park Service shouldn't be tweeting stuff. You work for the government. Mm-hmm. All right. So listen, now that the women have marched, what's next? We got to get into that a little bit later because it has to be more than one day if you truly are going to make something of this. This can't be like Operation Wall Street? Occupation Wall Street. Remember Occupation Wall Street? You know, and it just kind of drifted away. This has got to be more than just that. And the question I'd have for you, which we'll pick up here in a few minutes, was this more about fear of what Trump may do, or was this march about stuff that's already wrong, you know, equal pay for equal work and things of that nature? Because if it's about stuff that's already wrong, you can't blame it on Trump. He was in office a day at that point. But if it's fear, and it seemed to me that that was the majority of it, fear of where the country's going, that's
mainly
a different story.
Mainly fear, and there are a lot of solidarity, too. We can get into it.
Will Melania be the new fashion icon? What'd you think of her clothes this weekend? Is she the new Jackie Kennedy?
She looked great. She looked beautiful.
And we got a Super Bowl set, Dave, in the worst NFL playoffs, with the exception of about two games, just all blowouts.
I know. And normally you look at these matchups and you think, this is going to be, I can't wait to watch Atlanta and Green Bay.
Wasn't it just the two Cowboys, or the two Packers games, I mean, that were close? Packers-Giants, right?
Yeah.
And then Cowboys-Packers. Other than those two games, they've all sucked.
Yeah, it has not been a good year in terms of drama. I think the Super Bowl has the potential to be a pretty interesting game, but we've said that before, and it hasn't always worked out that way.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't have been more wrong. Is Hamp on today? Is Hamp joining us today to talk about this?
Yes, he is. Okay.
And lastly, Madonna says she's going to blow up the White House. Well, that's helpful.
It undermines the credibility of the entire White House press office
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. What it, you're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Alternative facts? Alternative facts, four of the five facts he uttered. The
hey,
one
Chuck,
thing he
why,
got
hey,
right
Chuck.
Was Zeke Miller. Four of the five facts he uttered were just not true. Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
I wish the term falsehoods wouldn't be used either. Because I don't care if it's Chuck Schumer, who, as you know, I'm not a fan of, or Nancy Pelosi, who I'm not a fan of, or anybody in the Trump administration, including the president. A falsehood's a lie. And if the president of the United States is going to throw out crooked media and they're the worst people in the world, call it what it is. When he lies, he lies. Standing by the phone is Pat Brady. Pat Brady was in Washington for the Harry Potter speech. It was a Harry Potter speech, Pat, because the picture that the president painted was of some sort of Harry Potter world. I don't live in the country he described.
Yeah, and what you described, carnage, not very upbeat, but you took my line there. I was thinking the same thing watching that interview yesterday. I go, what's a falsehood? It's a fat lie.
Yeah.
Just call it a lie. He lied. He lied four times. And I know, Sean, I think that was a hostage video. I'm sure Trump sent him out, saying, you better say this, and I'm watching. And he did, and he got out of there.
Well, it creates an interesting question, though, right? And I feel badly for, I don't know Sean Spicer at all, and he annoys the hell out of me in the 2 days that I've seen him, the transition periods. I'll take your word for it that he's a good guy. I've heard it from other people as well.
He's a military guy, too. He's a former military guy. So but anyway.
But having said that, when your boss says to you, you're going to go out there and you're going to lie and you're going to say this, you're going to go out and say this and you're going to do it right now, you're in a position of having to literally quit at that point or go out and do it. But the fact that he went out and did it, he's got some serious Band-Aid work to do with the media that now is supposed to believe what he says when they know that he lied to their face in the first appearance he had with them.
Yeah, and the second point to that, and Chuck Todd made that in the interview, is that he not only speaks for the president oftentimes, he oftentimes speaks for the country.
Right.
And that credibility is blown. The minute you get caught lying once, it's pretty tough to put the cork back in it. You've been branded a liar, and that's bad, and it's bad for the country. So I agree, either should have quit or maybe should have said it a different way, but I don't know what alternative facts are, but I think I used that line in high school with my mom.
I was going to say, yeah, Pat, I was going to say, yeah, everyone has now their lie already, their excuse ready. Oh, it's an alternative fact. Were you out last
night? My kids were using it yesterday afternoon.
Exactly. Yeah, I bet they were.
But you know what? That's a great point. And I said to Steve earlier, too, how are you going to believe anything now that he says? If he comes out, I mean, his job is to present the facts to the press, and then the press goes and reports it. That's how a press conference works.
But here's the thing, though.
And he comes out and says, we obliterated ISIS.
This is important. He can play dumb. He can come out and pretend he doesn't know what's going on. He can bend the truth. But he cannot lie. He cannot blatantly lie to the people whose job it is to uncover lies.
Right.
And to actually report the things that are actual facts. I mean, that's a really bad start.
It's a terrible start for him. But as we talked about for 20 months, Trump not afraid to use alternative facts, too. And
here's the thing about Trump. I wrote about this last week. Trump's a bad liar. Trump lies constantly. Politicians lie constantly. Presidents lie constantly. But presidents lie sometimes when they don't have to, sometimes when they do. And every president lies. But the fact is, Trump is really bad at it because he'll throw stuff out that is instantly checkable. And then when it happens, when he's checked and he's caught, he acts like, well, who are you going to believe, the truth or me?
Yeah, I mean, Bill Clinton, I still believe he didn't have sex with that woman. I mean, that was well delivered.
Yeah, I think Monica believes it, too.
He had some practice, though, on that line.
So you're in Washington Friday, a huge missed opportunity, because what I hoped President Trump would say was this is a divided country. And in this divided country, I want to try to earn the support of the people that are concerned on this day as we move forward, because that's the only way we're going to succeed as a country, as opposed to this picture that he painted that again, represents a country I'm not familiar with.
He did, but here's the way, an analysis of it, not being partisan. It was an amped up campaign speech, like you called it the other day, or it's the worst inaugural address in the history of the country, which a lot of people that view it through that prism think. But this is my question. Are we just in a different universe now? He has a million new Twitter followers. I mean, is this how we're going to communicate? I think it's a bad development. I thought it was not a very good speech because of the things we talked about. But maybe things are different now. Well, I don't know if you can make a comparison to John F. Kennedy's speech.
Yeah, and I don't know that you need to, but I know this. He's got 21 million Twitter followers, which is a lot, but there's 321 million people in this country, actually more than that. So he doesn't have all of them. So, you know, you can communicate through social media and get exponential media coverage from it, but that can't be the way you communicate constantly. And secondarily, you got to try to get more than the 37% you have now. The campaign's over. He's not running for anything.
I agree with that. But here's another thing to watch. In about 6 months, those elected people in the House of Representatives and the senators that are up are going to start looking at his poll numbers, and they're going to say, you know, I can't hang with this guy anymore if he's at 35% because he's going to kill my race. So where this might break is the time that people start focusing on the midterms.
You know, I truly feel the worst for it, and I mean this sincerely. And you were there amongst the masses on Friday. The people in Washington who traveled and spent their money to be there, they brought their kids to see this moment because they truly believe what Donald Trump has told them and that he's going to change this country. Not only did he not lay out any specifics of how he plans to do that, I don't believe there's any strategy at all. There may be strategy with Mike Pence and Priebus and those that will try to get him on that page, but what he presented to those people who fought so hard to get there and fought during the campaign to believe in him, I don't think he presented them anything they can run with at all.
No, if you look at some of the rhetoric about America first and we will do only things, you know, thinking of America first, that's some dangerous rhetoric when you think about you're talking to the world.
Right.
And I get where he said we return the country to the people. That's a good line, I think. But the rest of it is kind of scary. And this, we're one country in a big world, and you got to watch it when you talk like that.
Yeah, and the school thing. You know how many teachers I heard from this weekend that were just unbelievably insulted? The thing about empty-headed students walking around with no knowledge? What?
A lot of teachers Saturday, too.
I just like to have been President Obama sitting there listening to that because it pretty much talked about his administration and what a terrible job it did. And I get you do some of that, but it was not very uplifting. But again, it is, what's the standard now? Who knows? But we'll see in about 6 months.
Yeah, I don't think you can insult your way through 4 years. Meanwhile, there's a development in the FBI investigation into the Russia connection. We'll tell you about that a little bit later as well. Pat Brady will join us later this week. Of course, we may need him in 15 minutes. Who knows? It's a very fluid situation.
All right, guys. See you. Have a good day.
All right, man. That's Pat Brady. 6:33. We're way late. Good start to the week. That's how I roll. Back with the big story next on 720 WG.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better.
I've got a stomach pain that's low.
By making medicine better.
Fungus on my toe,
and let's talk about medicine with our friend, the man in the white lab coat, Dr. Kevin Most. Dave, say hi to Dr. Most.
Morning, Dr. Most.
Dave, welcome back. Hope you had a great vacation.
I did. Thank you. It's great to be back. I was a little sick, actually, on vacation, but
you're okay
getting
now.
Over it. Yeah. Just,
Andrea, say hi to Dr. Most.
Hey, Doc. What's going on?
Andrea, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Big walk on Saturday, huh?
Yeah, big march. Lots of people.
Wow. Of amazing. People. Good turnout from Chicago.
Yeah, very amazing cool. Turnout.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we can only read maybe a third of the signs on the air.
Yeah.
Mary Vandeveld, say hi to Dr. Most.
Hi, Doc. How are you?
Good, Mayor. How are you?
Good. I hope your allergies are okay.
They're doing a little bit better.
Good.
I wonder if does everyone know Mayor and I went to high school together?
Yeah, and that you hit on her and she wouldn't give you the time of day.
She rebuffed me. She said no.
Yeah. I tell you.
You didn't even know what rebuffed meant back then.
If I would have known, you were going to be a doctor, I tell you.
Yeah.
Oh. Change my
tune. Imagine how things would have changed. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We want to talk about drugs and interactions with drugs. Because, Doc, as you know, if I want to check out an interaction with a drug now, I can go to a website like drugs.com, put in a couple of drugs, and the interactions will come up. But even that can be a little dicey because unless you spend time to dive deep on it, you'll just go with the first thing that comes back that says, I think the way they grade it is moderate interaction or severe interaction.
Yep.
Or no interaction. So it is a potential minefield, and it's of great concern to you and everybody in the medical field, right?
It definitely is. And, you know, if everyone saw the Tribune article just before Christmas, actually, it was a 3 or 4 day series on how poorly pharmacists and the pharmacies here in Chicago do in identifying severe allergic reactions and severe drug interactions. And we kind of look at those pharmacists as our last line, but we also have to realize that the patient has a responsibility. The doctors certainly have a responsibility in the pharmacy. We should have three checks along the way to make sure that what we're giving patients from a medication point of view is safe.
And it's really remarkable. How many prescriptions are filled in a year, approximately?
4.5 billion.
Prescriptions.
Correct.
It's remarkable we don't hear about sickness and death from this every day. I mean, I salute Walgreens and CVS and these pharmacies and the mom-and-pop places, too, for getting it right.
Yeah, yeah. For the most part, they do. And you know what? There's you guys may not hear it or see it, but we see it a lot. We see patients come back into the hospital. They're readmitted because of drug interactions or admitted because of drug interactions. So very important that we get our arms around this. And when you stop and look at it, 20% of Americans take three or more medications. 10% take five or more medications.
Let's do traffic. We'll come back and go over some specifics here, including all of our responsibilities. But if you've been to the doctor in the last couple of years and you're wondering why you have to have your list of medications and why three people ask you about it, well, this is why. It's important stuff. And yep. It shouldn't be up just to the pharmacist, so doc's going to tell you why it's not. .652, Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. And Doc is here as we talk about drug interactions and the safety we need to have and how we need to be better at it. Let's talk about this mail order stuff that's going on, Doc.
Yep.
It would seem that this is rife with problems, but insurance companies in a lot of ways are insisting on it now.
They are. You know, everyone's trying to look at how can we lower the cost of healthcare. And one of the ways that they can do that is by using mail order. It costs a whole heck of a lot less to mail a prescription than to go get it filled at a pharmacy. So you have doctors who are beckoning to the insurance company, and they say, okay, here's what we want you to do. We want you to use this mail order. So the patient now will send in their prescriptions, and they get it back. Unfortunately, that's often just with their primary care doctor. So now they'll go to a specialist, they'll go to an urgent care, they'll go someplace where they need the medicine immediately. And unfortunately, sometimes when they do, those pharmacies don't have that information that they need.
So mail order is still an option. I know this is probably the age-old question, but can you do it with the generic medicine too? And is that the same as the regular antibiotic or whatever the regular medicine would be, Doc?
Yeah, absolutely. For the vast, vast, vast majority of medications, the generic is just fine. There are some that there is probably not. Thyroid medications are some of them that I would say, listen to your doctor. He may say, hey, you know what? I don't want you to take a generic on this because it varies a little bit. But for the most part, the chemical compounds in the generic are the same as the trade name. And certainly will definitely lower the cost dramatically in some cases. And in other cases, it's actually almost a push as far as the cost. So, you know, look around, shop around a little bit if you want to save some money. But as I say that, be careful that wherever you're shopping around has all your other information.
Yeah, because there's folks that will pharmacy shop, right? And if you're pharmacy shopping, you're at an extra layer of risk into your own health.
There are tons of people who pharmacy shop. There's a couple reasons for it. One, you have every pharmacy in the world saying, hey, we'll give you your first prescription free to transfer over to us. So you see people jumping around back and forth between pharmacies. And the other thing is when you go to the doctor's office, you have time to sit with the doctor, and hopefully a nurse or a doctor or a medical assistant goes over your list of medications. In the pharmacy, it's the exact opposite, right? You got in there, you want to get out of there as quickly as possible. That pharmacist is pressured to get that filled and get you on your way because they don't want you standing in the pharmacy walking around being angry, saying, well, I'm not coming back to this pharmacy.
Digital medical records, I would assume, help, but is it true, or are there problems there?
Yeah, you know, the electronic medical record, everyone, you know, there's good parts and bad parts to it. You know, unfortunately, our offices are not designed properly, so often we have our back to you when we're doing the records, which is terrible. But the capabilities of the record is great. If you have good information in your electronic medical record, and I try to write a prescription, if I have your complete listing, that warning is going to come up to me and say, hold on, time out. Severe drug interaction, do not use this drug. The bad thing is that sometimes I don't know you're on that medicine because you got it from an orthopedic surgeon and now you're in to see me. So the electronic medical record is as good as the information that's put into it.
What about patient responsibility? You know, when I go into a doctor and they say, you know, give me a list of your meds, I care the couple that I take, I have them in my wallet. I mean, not like I can't remember them, but I have, you know.
In case you're unconscious.
Well, if it's 2:30 in the afternoon and I'm mush-brained, you know, maybe I'll space. But people need to have, you know, a written copy on them or in their phone or something, right? Just so they know.
Absolutely. One of the worst questions a medical office can ask somebody is, has anything changed since the last time you were here? Because most of us don't remember the last time we were here, and also we don't remember that we've been to somewhere. So what the question should be is, can I see your list of current medications? And, you know, on that list, whether you keep it on your phone or you keep it in your wallet, what the name of the medicine is, and you can put down either name. We can figure out the generics off of the trade names. What the strength is, how often you take it, why you take it, and more, very importantly is, who's the doctor that prescribed it? So that if I have a drug I want to put you on, a medication I really think you need, I'm going to call that other doctor and say, hey, would you mind if I stopped Mrs. Jones's X for 10 days because I think she needs this? So very important that we communicate. But I'll tell you, docs right now are so stressed on time that these little things we really start to need to really rely on electronic medical record having great information in it.
Would you, could you see at any point in doctors' offices and practices having a, you know, a nurse or, you know, maybe a physician's assistant dedicated just to the medical stuff, the prescription stuff to make sure it's right?
Yeah, we call it medication reconciliation, and really it's probably one of the most important things about the history. Because it's interesting what you said before. I got asked the same thing three times, and that's something that frustrates people. But we do ask the same thing three times because your answers are going to be different than they are to a nurse. If I ask you a question, you're going to answer it differently than you would have to a nurse, than you would have to a receptionist. So walking through that is really important, but that medication reconciliation at the beginning of the visit and at the end of the visit is very important. People coming in the hospital, it's one of our biggest safety concerns. Tell us what meds you were on when you came into the hospital, because you don't bring them all with you. We need to make sure that we continue those while you're in the hospital. And then when you leave, we need to make sure that anything we're giving you that's new and which ones are you going to continue that you were taking at home. So the importance of medication reconciliation is huge. And here, we actually here at the hospital, and many hospitals have pharmacists that do a good portion of that.
So what you're telling me is you're not trying to annoy us. You're trying to keep us alive.
Absolutely. And that's probably the big news or the big thing for the people that are at the pharmacy. Waiting the additional 5 to 10 minutes to make sure that you're getting a safe medication, I can tell you is a whole heck of a lot better than spending 5 days in the hospital because you wanted to get out of Walgreens quickly.
Doc and I were going to talk about a baby pool thing that's very popular now. We're going to have to save that. But last question, Andre.
Last question for you, Doc. What about the pharmacies in Canada and Mexico, too? Safe, reliable, stay away?
You know, the pharmacies in Canada, I would say, are okay. I think that the medications there are fine. The pharmacies in Mexico, especially if you're traveling in Mexico, I would be very hesitant just because you can buy too many medications over the counter in Mexico.
That's why I'm building the wall.
Yeah, well, you could buy antibiotics over the counter in Mexico, and we have a huge problem with overuse of antibiotics in this country, so right. I'd be hesitant about that. But some people, you know, are saving money by going and getting medications from Canada.
Good tip from Eddie from Michigan. I take pictures of all my meds the night before I go to my doctor, and I just show him my phone.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. If you told me the shape of your drug, the color of your drug, and anything that's written on it, I can tell you what medicine you're on. So taking the picture is great because even the generics have to be identified by wording and the shape and the color of the drug.
Does that go back to when you were a resident? Because that was pre-internet.
Oh, I'll tell you, pre-internet, we used to get a book called the Physician Desk Reference, PDR.
Yeah.
And that's how we used to have to figure out drug interactions. So you can imagine how far we've come since then. Now, the number of medications has exploded over the past 15 years as well, though.
Yeah, that's probably something I'm glad I didn't know in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
And all the doctors know about the little blue pill because all their friends are asking for them for a friend.
Correct.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Always great. Thank you, sir.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care. And we'll do the baby pool thing next time. Nobody on the staff is pregnant. Mary Vanderbilt, are you pregnant?
What?
No, just joking.
I'm having a grandchild. I hope not.
It's all in your head. We got another medical segment coming up. How much of a psychosomatic nutcase are you? Or is it really an illness? One of the world's experts on it coming up. News next, 720 WGN.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Oh, I feel a little faint. A little clammy. Maybe I have clams. Dr. Suzanne O'Sullivan, world-renowned expert on psychosomatic illnesses. Hey, it's all in your head. That's her book, True Stories of Imaginary Illnesses. And she joins us now. Good morning, doctor. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I know many people in my life who their first stop is WebMD. And when they go to WebMD, when they're feeling a little funky, before you know it, every time they click off or log off, they're going to the hospital. How much of this goes on? I mean, is there a percentage we can assign to it?
Well, what we do know is that about one third of people who go to their primary care doctors and who go to hospital specialists have what we call medically unexplained symptoms, which are believed to have a psychological or behavioral cause. So this is something that's very frequent.
What do you do with it as a doctor?
Very much it's treating the individual as an individual. So there's lots of different ways that we can develop physical symptoms for psychological reasons. Sometimes it happens because of stress or psychological trauma, in which case that individual would need help from a psychologist or a psychiatrist. But sometimes we can develop disability just through worrying about our bodies and by reacting in particular ways to injuries. So, for example, if you injure your back and you're afraid to walk, and the more you're afraid to walk, the less you are able to walk and so on, then what you really need is physical therapies with someone like a physiotherapist or occupational therapist. So it's a very individualized path of treatment.
So when someone has it all in their head, do they fight doctors on this? Do they go, no, I'm really sick?
Well, unfortunately, there is a stigma surrounding a diagnosis of a psychosomatic illness, and it's really important to say that people who suffer in that way are really sick. So people are quite right to attest that. But unfortunately, at the moment, the diagnosis of a psychosomatic condition is often considered synonymous with there being nothing wrong or with someone pretending to be ill. Someone who has a psychosomatic illness has an absolutely real disorder, which is extremely disabling to them and needs to be taken seriously. But unfortunately, because of the misunderstanding surrounding diagnosis, people do resist it.
I know somebody with chronic fatigue syndrome, and if I remember this right, I think Cher had this for a while, and the medical community at that point wasn't taking it all that seriously. Do we have situations like that where we don't think it's a real deal, and then suddenly we realize it is, and many people get it?
Well, that's absolutely correct. Unfortunately, when people suffer with things like chronic fatigue syndrome, people don't take them seriously. We all think, well, I've been tired. I know what that feels like. But anybody who's had chronic fatigue syndrome will tell you that the tiredness that they experience is nothing at all like a sort of normal tiredness that we all have from time to time. And unfortunately, I think that things that cannot be measured and things that cannot be seen on scans tend not to be taken seriously by either doctors or the general public. We need to take people at their word. There is a difference between illness and disease. You know, disease is a pathological process, and illness is how a person feels. If a person feels so unwell they're unable to function in society, then that's a very serious medical problem, and we need to stop disregarding it.
Doctor, can your body get used to antibiotics? So say you have some sort of a symptom, but your body's so used to the antibiotics that it could be something greater and that's masking it?
Well, it's not that your body gets used to antibiotics. It's that the bugs get used to antibiotics and become resistant to it. I don't think that that's the origin of psychosomatic disorders. I think that the origin is that somebody reacts in a particular way to being ill, rather than sort of learning to overcome the symptoms. They pay so much attention to the symptoms that the symptoms appear to get worse.
My mother had severe rheumatoid arthritis that eventually led to conditions that took her life. But she was incredibly strong and didn't spend a lot of time complaining, almost no time complaining, even though she was in chronic pain. And I took a lot from that in the way I am when I'm sick. I just want to be left alone. You know, I'm disgusting. Leave me alone. But I think we all have the power to make ourselves better by not living in that world of how miserable we are. Is that true?
I certainly think that one learns how one will respond to injury and to illness early in life. So I think that, you know, a child who is coddled when they're ill may find that they take to the bed more readily when they're an adult who becomes ill. So certainly there are patterns of behavior that can be learned in childhood. But I think that psychosomatic disorders can really happen to anyone if the circumstances are correct. But certainly there are particular patterns that do develop and can be learned from family.
Your book is called It's All in Your Head, True Stories of Imaginary Illnesses. Give us a couple of examples.
Well, for example, there is a lady in the book called Yvonne who, after a minor injury in which some cleaning fluid was sprayed into her eyes, became profoundly blind. Now, the accident that she had couldn't explain the blindness. What's more, her physical examination was completely normal and all her pupillary responses and her objective findings on measurement of her eyes were totally normal. But her experience was that she was profoundly blind. And that is actually a surprisingly common manifestation of psychosomatic disorders, as are many of the other conditions described in the book. So, for example, I'm a neurologist and I see many people with seizures. 1/5 to a quarter of people who go to epilepsy clinics with seizures have what we call dissociative seizures and would have been called hysterical seizures in the past. So really, I tell many of the stories of my experience of working with people with these hysterical seizures and how horribly disabling they are to the individuals, but how little help is available for them.
There are some people, of course, who are chronically ill even when they're not. Ro Khan does the afternoon show here. Very talented guy, but he gets the sniffles, and by the time 15 minutes has passed, he believes he's going to die. How many of those type of folks do you encounter, and what do you do about that particular class of individuals?
Well, I think hypochondria is a different sort of disorder to psychosomatic disorders. So in a psychosomatic condition, one is disabled by the actual physical symptoms. So it could be a difficulty walking or shortness of breath or palpitations or seizures. It's the symptom that is key, and there may be no anxiety at all. Hypochondria is where one is disabled by anxiety, and the symptom might be something really small. And they would be different conditions. Hypochondria would be more likely to require psychological support rather than the support of a medical physician.
That's why we've been trying to get in the budget, to get him a staff psychiatrist just to sit in on the show. True Stories of Imaginary Illnesses. Is it all in your head? It's Dr. Suzanne O'Sullivan. You've probably seen her on television over the last many years talking about this, but it's a very important discussion to have, and we appreciate the education today. People want to get the book, available everywhere books are sold, I assume?
Yes, everywhere.
All right. Enjoy your day. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
It's 7:21 traffic, Mary. And I mean, unless you're too sick.
Oh, I'm...
All right, let's go.
I'm feeling okay.
Oh, good news. It's time once again to give away Hawks tickets. How can I win, Steve? Is it a riddle? Not today. Nope, not today. Today, it's Mary Sandberg Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet's favorite bit.
Yeah.
We've stuffed a puck in the pants of a celebrity.
Did you start this bit by saying, how can I win?
Yes, I did.
I thought so.
Yes. And you can win Blackhawks tickets, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. If you can tell me, based on my clues, be the first correct caller, and you can tell me who's got a puck in their pants. Let's go to the clues. Clue number one, this celebrity is very funny. Very funny.
And it's not you?
It's not me. This celebrity, well, I do feel, no, it's not me. This celebrity is, just to tell you, it's not me. This celebrity is multi-talented.
Multi?
Dave Ennett.
It's not Dave Ennett. No.
Go Cats.
What multi-talent does Dave have?
I don't know.
Thanks, Steve. Nice. Good to be back.
It's his first day back.
I eliminated myself as multi-talented. And clue number three. This celebrity loves hockey. Loves hockey. Might even play hockey. Maybe I've said too much. 312-981-7200 is the number. First correct caller to guess who's got a puck in their pants wins tickets. How can Sandberg not love this bit?
It's fun.
It's filled with joy.
I'll tell you, Mike playing this music on it softens the blow of me not liking the actual content.
We'll come back. If we don't have a winner, we will give you even more clues on Puck in the Pants, a service of the Steve Cochran Show. Back after this. I thought you had to do your Channel 9 thing.
Oh, I did that before. We're all good. All good.
This individual is a celebrity. He's very funny. He's multi-talented. He loves hockey. And at one point said he was planning on becoming a ninja.
Uh-huh.
He's going to be a ninja. 312-981-7200, the number.
But it's a he.
Loves hockey. Did I mention he's Canadian?
Oh.
See, and there have only been about three Canadians in here who want to become ninjas.
That's all the Canadian ninjas. A total of three.
That's it.
Three total. Three Canadian ninjas. And this individual has a huge affinity for the World Champion Chicago Cubs. Okay? Every phone line is ringing. Everybody's, suddenly Smarty Pants, Smarty Pants. Look where you're from. British Columbia. 312-981-7200. Okay? Okay. Again, sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Very funny, multi-talented, loves hockey, wanted to be a ninja. He's from Canada, strong affinity for the Chicago Cubs. Name that celebrity with a puck in their pants, and you're going to get tickets to your Chicago Blackhawks pair of tickets against Tampa Bay tomorrow. And enter to win four-season tickets for next year, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons will get a winner next. All right, I've asked Bennett Wakefield to join us in the studio. And Bennett now producing the opening bell. And nice to see you, Bennett. How are you?
You as well. Very good.
Yeah. Bennett has answered somewhere between 200 and 400 calls for Puck in the Pants. We don't have a winner yet. What are the guesses?
Vince Vaughn is a very popular guest.
Vince Vaughn's not from Canada, neither is Bill Murray.
Well, these are the facts that I'm, or alternative facts.
Oh, these are alternative facts. Okay, well, that's
fine.
So,
you know, I'm just going off of what the people are telling me.
Sure.
Jim Belushi's brother, not even a name, just his brother.
also not from Canada.
Yeah.
Also
you know,
not alive.
It's
Jim Belushi's brother? John?
Yeah.
Is he still dead?
He is, yes.
Okay. All right.
It's none of those above.
Yeah. Would you like the clues again?
That'd probably be a good idea.
So would I. What'd I do with them?
I thought you were making them up. Did you write them down?
Oh, here we go. Celebrity's very funny. He's multi-talented. He loves hockey. At one point, he said he wanted to have training to become a ninja. And a strong affinity for the Chicago Cubs. I mean, a strong affinity for the Chicago Cubs. First correct caller at 312-981-7200. Should I give one more clue?
Give one more.
Yeah, I think
his
so.
Name rhymes with Diane Remster.
312-981-7200.
Really? Good luck, Bennett. I hope someone wins.
Me too.
Time now for this.
Hey, it's Ryan Dempster.
Well, you don't think my clue was enough?
Hello.
And no, that's not what you're thinking. I actually have a puck in my pants.
We'll go seventh caller. We'll make it this way. We'll go seventh caller. That was a technical mistake on my part. We'll go seventh caller for the win, Bennett. Seventh caller for the win. All right, let's do Hemp.
Here comes Green Bay. Ryan throws end zone. Jones caught it all the way through. Touchdown, Atlanta. And that's why he is who he is. Ryan wants to throw. Jones to catch.
Look 40. Out. Midfield. Julio into Green Bay territory. A stiff arm at the 15. 10. 5. Touchdown, Atlanta.
Brady will move under center. Ball's at the 1. Blunt in the backfield. Takes the handoff. Runs it up the middle. LeGarrette Blunt to the end zone. Jones looks down the middle, throws down the middle, touchdown Edelman! One more score for the Patriots
in
this AFC Championship.
Start the buses, baby.
I tweeted this out yesterday, and you know it's true. Yesterday was the best Sunday Bears fans had all season. The Hall of Famer Dan Hampton joins us now. Hamp, what happened to those Packers?
Oh, yeah, it was a cholesterol stoppage, wasn't there? The pack, there was a couple of things that may have contributed to it. We all heard about, the flu was going around through the Packer locker room. They were fogged in. They didn't get in till late. It was just, it was, as you said, it's the Bear fans' revenge. And Atlanta's a pretty good team. They were the number one scoring offense in football all year. They showed you why. They can get it going. And Julio Jones, he's not bad, I'll tell you that.
No, some of the catches he made were unbelievable. And Matt Ryan, does he now become one of the best in the game conversationally for a guy that had never closed the deal in the playoffs before, or does he have to win it?
I know three guys that have a legitimate vote in the NFL MVP award every year. And all three of them voted for Matt Ryan.
Oh, is that?
Yeah, and this was back around Christmas time. So his season only continues to get better. And quite honestly, nobody is doubting the fact that Atlanta, our dear friend Ed Obradovich has said those that continue to think, well, it's defense, it's an offensive league. The league has changed the rules. The smart people are adjusting and taking advantage of it. That's the two teams we're going to see in the Super Bowl.
That's why you don't see shutouts anymore. Impossible for a defense to have a shutout. You breathe on a quarterback, you're going to get flagged.
Well, there was a couple of shots on Aaron Rodgers yesterday. I was shocked the officials didn't call it. And, they want to profess, we're taking care of the players, we're protecting them, blah, blah, blah. Well, they didn't. So they let them play a little bit. And, hey, the Packers, hey, it was a great story. They won eight games in a row. And most of it because of their quarterback. But, hey, when you play a really good team, a team that's a legitimate Super Bowl contender participant, well, you got to have more than one guy. And it was very interesting. Sanu and Julio Jones showed you what truly devastating, speed receivers can do for an offense. And we're kind of in this what would you call it, flux, where we're saying, okay, we've got a receiver. He was designated a franchise player, and that's Alshon. What we saw yesterday were franchise receivers. So it'll be interesting to see how we evaluate after watching that performance.
The always exciting Bill Belichick will break down the Super Bowl over the next 2 weeks, and you can imagine the insight we'll gain. Tom Brady got it done in a big way over a very good Pittsburgh Steelers team last night as well. We'll have him break down that side of the equation and get an early prediction here, subject to change. $7.54. I'm guessing he's not a great guest at a Christmas party or a birthday party or a barbecue or anywhere where humans gather outside of a football practice. But is Bill Belichick the greatest coach of all time? I mean, if you're going to be good at something, be good at something.
I mean, he's got a team to the Super Bowl for the seventh time. No one's ever done that.
Pretty impressive. Dan Hampton rejoins us, the Hall of Famer. Where would you rank Belichick all time on the coaches list?
Well, if he's not at the top, let's figure out why. Here's a great illustration. Martellus Bennett was having trouble just getting along with the guys in the locker room.
Right.
Shea McClellan was basically you know, lining up and getting pummeled on play after play. They both were picked up off the scrap heap by Bill Belichick. Now both of them are going to a Super Bowl. Martellus Bennett played a huge role in the way this season went out, with, of course, the you know, the tight end Gronkowski being injured, nicked up most of the year. Martellus Bennett was a big part of the offense, and that is an illustration of great coaching. You know, John Madden always used to say, every year I don't go in with preconceived plans and thoughts and game plan. I wait and I watch and see what we can do. And then I build a game plan out of what I think we can do best. And, you know, you look at Jordan Howard on our team. Say what you want. I mean, he was basically toiling in obscurity until Langford was hurt, Carey got hurt. They had to put him in. What was it, week four? And so, but you know, it was almost like, you know, someone pulls something out of the kitchen drawer and goes, oh, wait a minute. Hey, look what we got here. Well, you know, smart coaches, they know how to take talent and put it to work, utilize it. And if that, Chris Hogan is another, you know, piece of evidence. We all have heard about Julian Edelman and a few of the other guys. But who's Chris Hogan? Well, Chris Hogan had 10 catches, 180 yards. I mean, he's, you know, he's becoming a superstar because he understands what they need him to do, and he does it.
Yeah, the star from Monmouth College, by the way, Chris Hogan.
He was a lacrosse player.
Yeah, how about that?
Well, and I heard you talking about your you know, shooting the half court shot this Friday. So that should inspire you, and you should say, "Hey, I can do this."
There you go. See, yeah.
Yeah, well, listen, I've humiliated myself twice on the Northwestern football field. Basketball should be next, and then we'll move on to lacrosse.
Here's my question, though. Would Bill Belichick have taken another team? I mean, he did. He coached the Browns, and, you know, it was maybe the wrong time for him, and guys do learn on the job, and they do get better. But would he have taken another team to the Super Bowl without Tom Brady? Would Tom Brady have gotten to the Super Bowl more than once without Bill Belichick? I tend to think he would have, but, you know, it's very hypothetical, but it just seems like this is sort of the perfect storm in New England for those guys.
Well, and you know what? And hindsight, and not that it's anything similar as far as accomplishment, but Mike Ditka and even Buddy acknowledged the fact that together they went to a Super Bowl, separately they didn't. And maybe that's some way in the abstract you could kind of look at these two. You know, the combination of the two of them, you know, and you could go back through the years, you know.
Well, there's Montana.
Cher. Were they ever as big?
Sonny without Cher, Cher without Sonny. Does Montana get to the Super Bowl without Bill Walsh? Well, you know, he gets there with George Seifert, right? And then he goes away. Well, I don't know that it always is a quarterback coach connection, but yeah, I don't think Belichick gets there with Drew Bledsoe.
Well, and again, we'll never know. But let me just say this: it's more than Belichick. There's some really smart coaches, and we've called, you know, McDaniels, McDipers, and you know, the defensive coordinator Patricia. They're good coaches, and you know what? And the clueless Phil Simms actually had it right last night when he said, you know. Bill, you know, the Patriot defensive way is to find out whatever you do best, and we're going to take that away and make you play left-handed. Now, yeah. Everybody says they're going to do that. Everybody said, well, you know, what did the Green Bay Packers not do? They did not take away Julio, and Julio beat their brains out. So, again, there's, you know, the Patriots way is a smart way, and they've got a lot of marginal players that know what is expected of them, and they're not going to be, you know, guys that you see lining up in the Pro Bowls year after year. But guess what? They're going to get a lot of jewelry because what is this? This was the 11th title game the Patriots have been in with Tom Brady. 11 of them. I played in three. So, I mean, I'm just saying that
that's
to me,
good.
That blows me away. They know how to do things the right way, and if you don't want to do it or you're unable to do it, they get somebody else.
Do you ever get Phil Simms?
Oh, yeah. And that was great. I'll never forget. We won in 85 and 86. They won it. And so we had the Clash of the Titans. They built it. It was the Monday night opener to the 87 season. And we beat the hell out of them. And Simms was so mad by the third and fourth quarter, he was screaming and trying to flip us off. He was acting like a little girl. So it was great.
Did you ever plant him, though? Did you ever get him real solid? Did you ever put him in the turf?
Yeah. You know, and again, everybody's deal was get rid of the ball quick. Get rid of it quick. So we got hits on him, but, you know, maybe not as good as some of the other quarterbacks had to endure over the years. But hey, let me just back to the Patriots real quick. You know, and I don't know, we haven't had a chance to develop it, but remember the Deflategate, the four-game suspension.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like for a lot of folks that don't really watch football, this is, you know, the, you know, revenge is best served cold. Well, this is Tom Brady basically saying, okay, Mr. Deflator, you're going to hand me that trophy.
Yeah, how about that moment?
2 weeks. So,
how about that moment?
I tell you what, you gotta love the manifestation of will. These guys have said we're going back, and we're going to kind of right a wrong in their mind. You know, he was wrong, and you know, I got to tell you, that whole Deflategate thing was asinine.
What are the chances Roger Goodell resigns right before the trophy handing out?
Zero. He's making $43 million a year.
Zero. You know, yeah. How's a guy supposed to get by on that?
If you swishing your three shots this week.
Yeah, right. If I hit all three. All right. Early prediction, Hamp. Pats or Falcons?
Patriots are favored by 3. I like them by at least 8.
Yeah, I like them by a touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's going to be a lot of Atlantic saying, you know, with the wide-eyed, hey, we're at the Super Bowl, where the Patriots are, hey, we're going to win a Super Bowl. Big difference.
Yeah, there is a big difference. Same thing, Dave?
Yeah, I would say. How do you pick against them on this stage?
We'll have plenty of time. Bye week, so we'll have plenty of time to finalize those predictions. Thank you.
Good luck Friday.
All right, this is
Thursday.
We need a break, don't we? Oh, we'll take a break first. But thanks, ChevyDriveChicago.com for the Hamp Time.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me good.
8:15, we have breaking terrorist news this morning. I don't want to frighten you, but...
What?
Terrorists are known by, you know, by one name, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and now Madonna. Madonna, one of the world's great terrorist organizations.
That is an alternative fact.
Madonna threatened to blow up the White House.
You know, if she turns suddenly and hits you in the face with one of those metal braziers, that could take out a whole city.
You act like it never happened. That's why I don't go to L.A. anymore.
So she was at the Women's March in Washington.
What do you think of the fashion at the Women's March, Andrea? Were they dressed, for...
I thought the fashion...
Were they casual?
Very casual. A lot of pink knit hats.
Did you stop anyone and go, who are you wearing?
No.
Is it Marshalls?
I did not. Mm. I did see a lot of interesting signage.
Those hats looked like kitty cats.
Yeah, they were supposed to look
like
kitty cats.
They had a special name, Steve. That...
Did you see... Yeah, you know what they were called,
yeah,
right? Okay.
Yeah. Did you see some of the signs, Dean?
I did.
Yeah. Some were very creative and funny until you saw like a 9-year-old standing next to him.
Some were...
So Madonna's at the march yelling in a speech. What did she say?
She sang her song "Express Yourself."
Seems appropriate for the event.
Totally. Yeah. She sang a couple of songs actually, and gave a speech about.
Would have been weird if she did like a version.
Papa don't preach. I'm in trouble deep. Yeah, that may not have been the best.
Works,
song. She gave a nice speech about empowerment and standing up.
I think
for
we have a
rights.
Clip. You want to hear it?
Sure.
All right.
I'm angry. Yes,
I am outraged. Yes, I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
Yeah, see, that,
see that's the part that's
not
helpful.
You don't want to... Her speech was like 5 minutes about empowerment, about standing up for your rights.
And then she threw that in.
And then she, it's like, Madonna, stop.
Yeah, there's
like,
your
don't
headline.
Say stupid. That's the verbal equivalent of the morons who were breaking windows of Starbucks on the day of the inauguration.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, protest. You know what was interesting? The Women's March in D.C., not almost a 500,000 people, not a single arrest.
Right.
The morons that were protesting, and I'm not saying because they're protesting, but you know, why you got to break Starbucks window? Why do you got to, you know, do stuff like that?
Well, you have two groups, right? You have the vast majority of the protesters who are there to express themselves, whether you agree with them or not, and then you got a few lunkheads that go and do that.
Dopes. Yeah. Beautiful speeches by Alicia Keys, beautiful speeches by America Ferrera, by Ashley Judd, by Scarlett Johansson. Very moving speeches. Gloria Steinem gave a beautiful, moving speech. I mean, the vast majority of the speeches, very, very moving, very, you know, spoke to what it's about. But it wasn't, it was a women's issues march.
Well, I tweeted out on Saturday that I sort of felt bad for President Trump because essentially it would be like, if your mother, your girlfriend, your sister, your aunt, your niece, your daughter were all mad at you at the same time.
Yeah.
All of them.
America Ferrera.
And they were all in a room with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. America Ferrera gave a nice speech, too.
Yeah.
I thought very
well. She did. And, you know, there was, you know, plenty of anti-Trump rhetoric, but it was mostly about women standing up and not wanting to give up any of the rights that they have and that they feel threatened. That's what the thing was about. And that's why it's you know, it's too bad that Madonna's, you know, thing that she says she was taken out of context. It was not taken out of context, really.
Out of context.
It was part of a much larger, much more profound speech, but it was very much in context. She just said something stupid. That was, you know, what that was about. But pretty, you know, these are, you know, people who are all concerned about America. I mean, that's as much rancor as you think there is in America. Oddly, both sides are only interested in what's good for America, you know, and have different ways of going about getting it. So.
When we come back, I finally saw Hidden Figures, loved it. And the stars Hidden Figures did great things this weekend.
Did you go to that free screening?
That's why I went. No, I'm actually pissed.
To Roger P. Henson's free
screening they had for low-income people. Steve snuck in.
That was me. Windy City Lake Shake's coming back for you country music fans.
Not called that anymore.
The only reason we're doing this story is to see if Dean curses on the air again. And Wayne Brady is part of something I'm calling Hamilton Gate. On Saturday's performance.
Yep.
And John Cleese and you on stage, which I'm told was fantastic.
We had a good time.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
Dean's back. I'm a little offended today, Dean.
Now what?
I'm wearing the same Gucci outfit that Kellyanne Conway had on Friday, and no one's mentioned it. Not even a word.
My little
kitty buttons on it.
Very patriotic.
Yeah, yeah. I like to call it.
Don't you have that left over from when you were a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader?
You know my favorite sign from the protests, and I can actually say this on the air, free Melania. all right, so the Windy City Lake Shake. What's the lineup? First, though, say the name of the event.
Well, the new name of the event is Country Lake Shake. They actually changed the name of it.
Are you sure it's Shake?
I don't want to take any credit, you know, thinking that we were the result of that. And when I say we, I mean me. When I accidentally, instead of saying the word city, said... something naughty.
Yes, he said an S word that rhymed with it.
Yeah. So now they don't say Windy.
Say it again.
Windy City Lake.
That was one of the highlights of last year. You may, you know, you may win a Stevie Award for that.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
That was a good one. I don't think they should put Windy City in anyway any more than anything should be called Chi-Town Rising.
Mm-hmm.
These are phrases that clearly people from out of town have made up. Anyway, it's called
the Windy City Lake Shake, which is now called what again?
Country Lake Shake.
Hmm. There's no city in the title?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I'm not guaranteeing I won't get something wrong in country, though.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. Well, that was on a lot of signs this weekend as well.
Sort of.
Yeah. So is this the event where they float a city skyline down the river and it's on fire?
No.
That's different?
That was the Lame Fest, I think that was called.
I think it was a city fest of some kind. How would you pronounce city? I forget.
You want me to just say it?
No, I don't.
Get it over
with? Nah, it wouldn't be fun if you just did it.
It's not fun if I just did it on purpose.
But it was, what's in the lineup? Are they all
huge? A huge lineup. Miranda Lambert.
Yeah, she's great.
Is going to be part of it this year.
That was Miranda there. She's very excited.
Wow,
she just found out she's playing.
Somebody's excited. Yeah. Rascal Flatts is going to be part of it this year. Little Big Town, Thomas Rhett.
Wow.
Among the big names. I've got some really huge names with
this.
That's
a good lineup, yeah.
There are about 20 different performers that will be here in the city for the show. That'll be June 23rd, 24th, and 25th. Tickets are going to go on sale February 3rd at lakeshakefestival.com. I'm even afraid to say shake.
I don't blame you.
I think I'm going to take Friday and Monday off because I'm going to be seeing all of those.
We have big meetings those days.
Yeah.
I just remembered we have big meetings those days.
Miranda Lambert's my favorite.
Tough break for you with the big meeting weekend that we're planning.
Will those meetings be going on in the suburbs or in the city?
Oh, no, it'll be in the city.
City?
Dave will be there, too, though. He's a huge country fan.
And remember, when you spell city, the H is silent. all right, so Wayne Brady Gate. This is the Hamilton performance Saturday.
This was Saturday afternoon. They do two shows on Saturday, and he was plugging along, and then suddenly, Wayne went on Twitter on Saturday night.
To explain himself?
Slightly explain himself.
Doing the Skylar Sisters number, I felt a pop, and then I started limping like the world's worst pimp, and not in a cool way either. And the pain hit me so hard at one point, all the lines just went out of my mouth. And Karen is looking at me, and I'm looking at Karen, and the audience is looking at us, and the band is playing. It was one of the weirdest 15 seconds I've ever had in show business.
So what happened is that he sprained a calf muscle jumping off of a stair.
Okay.
Seems
reasonable.
He had to, you know, he says that he was so consumed with pain that he couldn't speak because people on social media were speculating that he couldn't remember his lines.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they took him out of the show on Saturday afternoon and, the understudy went in. But he was back. He did physical therapy. They bandaged it up. And he was back in the show that night. The publicist of the show told me that he's back in the show. Monday is they don't perform anyway, but he'll be back in the show, regular schedule, starting tomorrow.
And everything I've heard is he's great.
I haven't heard anything bad about any of his performances. But Andrea can speak to this a little bit because, you know, I guess this could happen to anybody. He's 44 years old, but Andrea, didn't he get a little bit defensive when?
I thought so, yeah.
When we had him in studio the day that you were gone a couple of weeks ago, Steve.
I heard he was a jerk.
No, he wasn't.
No, he was a little defensive because Dean was...
I was teasing him about...
It was a great interview. Yeah, Dean said, you basically told him he has nice legs.
I told him he has great gams for a man his age, and he got all defensive about what great shape he's in and everything. And God knows, you know, I'm not going to jump off a stair. I certainly can't do what he does, but...
No. And someone made the mistake, me, of saying, oh, I really enjoy him. And whose line is it anyway? And he said, well, he does so much more than just that.
Let's make a deal. So lighten up, Francis.
Right.
And you got people in banana costumes coming up to you. That's your day job.
Yeah. And I'm not saying 44 years is, you know, that you're not physically fit or anything like that.
Look, I heard he's great at Hamilton.
It happens. Yeah. You know, things happen.
Kim Gordon saw him last week. She said it was just fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I
injured, my goddaughter saw him too. She said he was great.
I injured myself getting out of this chair.
So
it can happen.
It could happen. And is that chair in the suburbs or is it in the city?
It's in the city with a silent H. Remember that. And then we're seeing video all morning on the Channel 9 monitors here of you and your best friend, John Cleese. How much fun was that?
I don't want to brag. There's a picture on my Facebook page of him kissing me.
Yes.
I think I may, I'm about to become his fifth wife. And and I'm going to say, I mean, normally it wouldn't have occurred to me, but his four previous wives made out pretty well with
yes,
the alimony.
They're
so,
doing very well.
You know, if a guy's got to do what he's got to do.
Fortunately, he's out of money now, so all you get is one Monty Python
yeah.
album.
Well,
and a
that's
hug.
Very true. That's very true.
Yeah,
he couldn't be nicer. He could not be more pleasant and friendly.
Was he funny?
Everything. He was hilarious.
Cool.
They showed Monty Python and the Holy Grail on big screen, which was I hadn't seen the movie in a long time.
So funny,
so funny to see that movie. And then after the screening, I
you
went
had
out
flying
on stage.
Cows that you threw into the audience.
We had killer rabbits, yeah. Everything. He came on stage. We did almost an hour and a half. It was a full hour and a half of Q&A.
Wow.
People wrote down questions on cards, and I asked questions. Interestingly, I'm going to say there were about 50 questions. I went through all the questions to pick out the best ones and, you know, funny ones and so forth. But there were about 50 questions about the new administration, about Donald Trump.
Really?
About the U.S. government versus Brexit. There were a lot of political questions. And he talked, in this hour and a half, he talked for like 3 minutes. Not even 3 minutes. It was like 2.5 minutes about Donald Trump. Not overly complimentary. A lot of comedians, you know, I don't know if you've noticed over the past 50, 60 years, comedians satirize people, the presidents, and people in power.
What?
That's what John Cleese was doing. I know it's a shock to you.
Mm-hmm.
So he talked for, in this hour and a half, talked about Donald Trump for a couple of minutes. Two people got up and walked out.
Oh, my God.
They walked out.
That's great.
And John happened to notice it while he was talking. In fact, we have the clip. I had asked him one of the questions about Donald Trump. He started talking about Donald Trump's son-in-law and the women's marches that took place over the weekend.
Are you compelled to ask that question?
I am an expert. I mean, I'm not a big expert, but I'm a bigger expert than his son-in-law.
Let me start with something that I read on your Twitter account from yesterday,
yeah.
In which you asked, are men allowed to march today if they are in drag?
I love the idea of the march. I thought what happened yesterday was absolutely wonderful. And I love that. Got a couple of Trump supporters leaving there. Round of applause.
Gave them a round of applause as they were leaving.
Why would you invest the time and the money to go and then walk out at that point?
You go see a comedian who you know is,
yeah,
you know, really
plus sarcastic. Plus, there was nothing he said there that was offensive.
Well, he talked much more about Donald Trump, but it, you know, a couple of minutes. Come on, really. After they walked out, and by the way, gave him the finger while they were walking out.
That's nice.
John,
enjoy your day.
John insisted that they get their money back. He said, "I don't want them, you know, to come here and you know they don't like what I'm saying. They're right, but."
I would have charged them twice.
Give them their money back.
I would have charged them to leave the theater. I would have had ushers waiting at the door. You want to get to your car? $37.50.
Really fun night, though. He talked about his career. He talked about Monty Python. He talked about his cats. He talked just everything. He fielded any question that I gave him.
Well, I hope you do more of those because you were great with Norman Lear. No doubt you were great with him. I hope you do more of those.
It was fun. We had a great time.
The Dean Tour. Get the leather jacket.
Yeah. I'm like the James Lipton of Chicago. I'm the, what's he called?
He asked John Cleese what his favorite swear word. He said all of them.
There were a few swear words tossed about last night.
Yeah.
But that's how I talk when I'm not on the air. I can't help it.
C-H-I. All right, I'll talk to you later.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We're also meeting with the Prime Minister of Canada. And we will be meeting with the President of Mexico, who I know. And we're going to start some negotiations having to do with NAFTA. Anybody ever hear of NAFTA? I ran a campaign somewhat based on NAFTA.
He's got an interesting speech tick, right? China? NAFTA? I don't know what that is. Donald Trump today is not down with TPP. Yeah, you know him. This has never passed the negotiating stage anyway. And it will not be a breeze with NAFTA. But the TPP thing for the immediate future is going to be a thing of the past. We like Todd Graham. Todd Graham understands speech making, speech giving, and how to get your message across without sticking your foot in it. And joins us now. Where are you? You south? Where are you now?
I'm in St. Louis today.
You're in St. Louis. What's that, 15 minutes from your home office?
Yeah, it's a little farther than that, but yeah, it's not too far away from Carbondale. Carbondale's closer to St. Louis than it is Chicago.
Oh, by far, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember driving my daughter got her master's at SAU, and I remember driving her there, and it took 6 months. We had to stop for provisions at a general store.
You should try the train. Sometimes that's 6 months in a day, so you never know.
All right, you saw the speech on Friday. I thought Mr. Trump missed a huge opportunity to take what normally is, a pretty basic speech and turn it into something that actually would represent unity. Do you share that view?
Well, here's what I'm going to tell you today. I actually don't think the speech is as bad as some of the critics think.
All right, good. Let's hear it.
Here's why. Well, because let's sort of, you could either compare it with other speeches or compare it with himself. It certainly wasn't. People who say that, he missed an opportunity, partially that's true. But let's be honest, this was not the same as every other speech he's given. It wasn't the same as his campaign speeches. While it did have negativity to it, it certainly didn't have the same divisiveness. I mean, we forgot. A lot of people forgot just how divisive his campaign speeches were. They were very much, encouraging his audience to shout things out like "lock her up, lock her up, lock her up," that sort of thing. So, do I think it was a great speech? No, but I would actually give it a B because I actually wrote down some of the things people. Here's the thing: he wasn't overt when he should have been. He wasn't transparent. Instead, he was a bit opaque in his unity message because everybody said he missed an opportunity to unify the country. And I think in part they're right, but in part he still did it. He just did it in a little bit less obvious fashion. So he said things like, "I'm taking an oath to all Americans. This is not one person's pain, but this is all of our pain and all of our dreams and our future." The other unifying terms he used later were, other than themes that most Americans obviously get behind, Americans do get behind God. Americans do get behind, buy American, America first. So that, right. That's also a campaign theme. But that does unify more people. You'd be surprised. That unifies more people than you think. But then he did mention black, brown, and white. He then later said to all Americans in every city, "You will not be ignored again." Okay, admittedly, that's all. I wrote them all down, all of the unifying themes I could find.
But those are all fair points to make. But I think that's good that you did make them because nobody else is talking about that. Having said that, he painted a picture of America that I'm not familiar with students walking around with no knowledge and burned out cities,
carnage.
With rusted factories. And the phrase American carnage, which sort of jumps out. And frankly, yeah, there's trouble spots all over the country,
yes.
But carnage ain't us.
You're both so right about that, because now that's sort of the tone and tenor he set with the message. So I just wanted to start by saying, for someone who is, a Trump supporter, they did not necessarily see it as not a unifying message.
I agree.
You have to compare it with other Trump sort of speeches. And this was as close to unifying, perhaps, as he can get, which might be sad, but it certainly was in some parts unifying. Now, why I thought it needed to be more transparent and less opaque is because, just like you said, he missed an opportunity because people get to then read into the speech what they want. I coach debate and I teach speech and I teach my students. I stop them in the middle of a speech. I'm like, no, say that again, but make it even more clear. I say that all the time. I'm like, no, say that again, but make it even more clear.
Right.
Because people will. Right. Trump has a lot of people watching that speech who don't like him, who did not vote for him. So what most people think he needed to do, and I agree, is make it even more obvious of a unifying. Don't let us read something into your message. When you're at home talking to your wife or your husband and you're having a slight argument, don't let them read into your argument.
Well, then were there two speeches within the one? Was there his unification portion, but was that watered down by the American carnage?
Yeah, it was, but it absolutely was. By the way, my favorite, American carnage is terrifying, but the word everybody missed after that, he actually used the word ravages. you know, the ravages of America. And so I'm not certain I've ever heard that word in a speech like that before either. So it's not just carnage and ravages, but it's crime and gang and drugs. And so yeah, I think he lost it because people did call it, right, the next day they're calling it bleak and they're calling it dark. And I agree with all that. And so that it depends on your viewpoint of America right now. Does he honestly think that it's that bad? Or do you? If you think America is that bad, then you've probably found that speech excellent. But if it doesn't ring true, if it seems hollow to you, if you're like, well, again, with the Trump exaggerations, why does he have to exaggerate everything? That's why I kind of grade him down again, is because Trump can't just state facts in the speech. He has to over-exaggerate most of his claims.
I know in part of teaching debate at SIU, you try to teach kids what not to do. And let me just give you a quick list of some of the things Todd points out. Avoid trying to write a soundbite into it. Soundbite should happen as they happen, right?
Yep, that's absolutely right. You just, because the more you try to write that, the more it will sound phony. It sounds phony right away, and then in days and weeks to come, it sounds even worse. They don't catch on because you plan on it. They simply catch on because they do.
And Todd, I like this one too. Attacking critics. That was one of my concerns about this speech as well. Criticizing the policies of previous administrations. And I say that plural because you have four former presidents sitting on the stage.
He had stones. I got to give him credit for that. He had everybody right there and he was dumping on all of them.
But he didn't. But again, he dumped on the general context of America without talking specifics. What he did, and I think he wanted to obviously bring his folks back in, so he wanted to use some of his unifying campaign themes. But as usual, he went overboard. He used too much exaggeration. He made it seem like the picture I had in my mind. I don't know if you two are old enough, but when he was giving the speech, I pictured the New York of, I think it's, is it Blake Plissken, the escape from New York.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm old enough. Andrea is not.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, but yeah, I certainly, that's what I was thinking of. I'm like, oh goodness, it's Escape from New York. And so, yeah, it was just it was much too negative for most of America to actually see that. But in like Trump, so let's talk obviously about actual speaking style. The Trump that you were sort of making fun of right before I came on air, that Trump mostly was not there during that speech. As far as public speaking, it was also probably his best speech giving performance.
That wasn't the arrogance we normally see.
Yeah. No, it wasn't the arrogance. He didn't go off script. He had pretty good pauses, while his sentence structure is never complex, right? So it's not going to be a JFK. But still, it's an effective speech for him. It was, I thought, his best delivery he'd given. And sometimes you judge deliveries by, and I do in speech class, and I hate to say this, this probably shouldn't be recorded, but I judge them by what I hate the least, because I'm judging a speech and I'm like, oh, no. And it's like sticking needles in my eyes to have to watch, you know, an hour and a half of straight speeches. And so this time, Trump, I didn't do that. I thought he had his probably best delivery, both with his sort of verbal and his nonverbal communication. Now, here's the one thing nobody's talking about is I'm also grading that speech, though, not on the event, but the context around it. So could he have talked about the Women's March the next day? Absolutely. Sure. And he should have. And the reason he should have is because I think the Republicans have been very good at usurping the language and the movements of the left, right? So they do very good at sort of taking their names and using it to their advantage. Why couldn't Trump have one time had said, you know, there's a big march tomorrow, and it's a march for women, and I want all of my supporters out there because you should do that. And then when the numbers got high on Saturday, he could claim that they were half his people.
That's a great point. Now, see, that's a great point. You know, he ought to be listening to you. But see, this is why you're running the program at SIU, and you're on CNN, and you're educating us. And I don't mean that in a flip way at all. I appreciate it as always. It's Todd Grant.
The Wang Dang Doodle. Yes, indeedy.
It's 9:12. Welcome to the Wang Dang Doodle, the results portion of the program. There's a lot of bitterness in the studio as we enter the bye week prior to the Super Bowl.
Bitterness? Who's bitter?
You and Andrea are trying to come up with some sort of way to have Mary eliminated. And by the way, I don't just mean from the contest. I mean eliminated.
In life? Yeah.
Not
which
at all.
Mary?
No, if
this one, Sandberg.
Oh, okay,
as
good.
The commissioner.
That's fine,
here.
Then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, she's on my team.
Yeah, well, you might have to find somebody else. I'm just saying,
does the scoring. How
if something bad happens to Sandberg, I'm saying you two are guilty.
I'm not... That is not an alternative fact.
Let's go live now to my mom, but first we insist that we play this.
Oh, God, big baby.
That's mommy.
What an embarrassment. Embarrassment. Embarrassment.
In a world of major market morning radio, one woman struck fear.
Big baby.
In the hearts of jovial radio talent.
Big baby.
It's Steve's mom.
Tina! Bring me the axe!
You've been warned.
Hi, Mommy.
Good morning, dear.
How are you?
I'm fine, but you know, if you keep playing that theme, people won't realize how delightfully charming I really am.
Well, that's true. You are delightful and charming. Hey, are you moving sometime soon?
God only knows. We're trying. It's taking a while. You know what it's like with construction people?
Yeah, I've had contractors.
All those cliches are true.
I've had contractors living in my house since last summer.
I know.
Murphy Brown just moved in as well. We're doing the whole thing. So the reason I ask is I got to figure out when you're moving so I can have a back injury and I don't have to help.
Yeah, well, we weren't concerned about your help, believe me. We weren't counting on any of it.
Well, my mom is moving to, another place because the feds are on her tail.
This is typical of you. My mom is moving to another place. I won't bother to find out where.
Oh, yeah, I know where it is.
Could you do a drive-by, maybe?
No, I know where it is. The feds are on her tail.
I'm guessing it's Madigan-related.
This happens. Now, this happens every year at the end of football season because she's a numbers runner for the mob. And at the end of the football season, she's got to pick up and go. And, I mean, you know, you might have to leave stuff behind. And usually it's my stuff. She always remembers my sister's stuff, but my stuff gets left behind.
You might not want to say she runs numbers before we actually give the results. It might give the, you know,
impression that there's cheating going on.
Exactly.
Let's go live to Sandberg. Sandberg,
speaking of,
how did the teams do?
The Ducares, they pulled it out this week. 1,520 to 734 for the Don't Cares. Now, the Don't Cares only have two people playing at this point, so... There's that.
What's going on with my team?
Your team.
Tell me, you're the captain.
Grzanich, what's the deal with you?
Did I miss something? What's going on?
Yeah, you weren't sitting in your chair for picks. John DeCasse is AWOL, and Bennett is just picking Oakland and Derek Carr until the end of the season.
What?
That's kind of difficult when Oakland has been out since the first week of the playoffs.
I need a team huddle.
So, well, you're the captain. Get on it. All right, the individual from last to first.
Okay, last to first. Well, those three are in last.
Yeah.
Mike Jacobson, because he supports his girlfriend Audrey, had picked the Packers and Aaron Rodgers.
When are you going to stop having Audrey make your picks?
Well, now. It's over.
All right.
And okay. So he's in seventh place.
Okay.
Andrea Darlis is in sixth place.
Oh. Okay, you know what? I am pulling
bad
a Dave in it
showing
on this. 2 weeks in a row. Place. Wait. 2 weeks in a row, I picked the Patriots. I picked Tom Brady. Last week, I had the exact score of the game. I picked every Patriot this time, and they smoked. Who'd they play?
Still sixth place.
They smoked Pittsburgh.
But well, you're
who did you have? Who are your players?
Tom Brady.
Who else?
The two Patriots. Blunt and the other guy.
Yeah.
And my score was right on.
Yeah, well, not
you had Le'Veon
right
Bell?
Some of us
yes
are.
Le'Veon Bell doesn't play for the Patriots.
No, I didn't have him. I had Blunt and then
Garrett Blunt was your
I forget the other guy, but she happened to pick low performers for the Patriots.
Yeah, your performers had bad performance issues.
Don't be messing with my performance.
Okay,
my
fifth
performance
place,
is always
fifth
right on.
Is your mother Ann, and Mark Carmen picked for her.
Well, that's not your fault, Mom. Mark Carmen picked for you. Part of the reason is we have to come up with a system, Mom, where I can get a hold of you. Like, I call, it rings once, we hang up, and then I call back. So you don't think it's, you know, the authorities calling you?
Well, it could be deliberate on my part. You never know.
And in Ann's defense, I called her 10 minutes before that segment last week because we had decided to do it.
No, you called her 10 minutes before because I asked you the day before and you forgot to call her.
Yeah.
You know, hold on a minute. I have never heard such petty bickering from such great people. What is wrong with you all?
Yeah, I know. I know,
you lost it, all of you. Now, this is what I suggest. Football is almost over.
Yes.
Thank goodness.
I say that we all get behind the Wildcats,
Yes.
We listened to Dave's broadcast, which, by the way, I listened to yesterday, was phenomenal.
Thanks,
I mean, it
was
Mom. So good,
thank
I didn't
you.
Even listen to the football game.
Thank
they
you.
Need a minute together here?
Yeah, you guys need a room?
Okay.
Maybe get out of
your
the
mom's
way.
The
I
best.
Would just suggest that you all get behind a winner and you calm down, because this is upsetting to a mommy. We don't like the fighting.
And for some more fighting, Mary Vandeveld is in fourth place.
Nice going, Mary.
Why are we fighting? What's the deal?
In third place is Dave Ennett.
Dave, third, not bad.
I yeah. well, I had
considering
Le'Veon.
Your picks were out of state.
Well, that and Le'Veon Bell pulled his groin.
Yeah,
hey, you had listen, a groin pull, and you still.
So what Le'Veon Bell does in his private time is none of our business.
Yeah, that's true.
And then tied for first place is Steve Cochran and Mary Sandberg.
Okay, how do you get first place every week? And you're doing
nice
this
going. Good job,
no,
guys.
Seriously, this is I'm gonna have to.
She
I thought
loses
Orion
everybody
was our commissioner.
Picks.
It's, yeah, you're no, the, you're
hold
the
on.
Commissioner.
I gave my
every
hold
week.
On. I'm applauding for me.
Oh, yeah, good job, Steve.
Yeah, you're on our team.
Yeah, we're happy
we're,
for
we're
you.
We're happy for you.
Yeah, these picks, this is ridiculous.
Congratulations to me. Oh, and you too, Sandberg.
Why? She yeah. wins every week. Like, that's a shock?
No, it's not every week.
Just in the postseason.
Now, we don't have to play next time, do we? I mean, there's
just
only
the
one
Super Bowl.
Game. What are we going to pick now?
We have the Pro Bowl next
week. Hold on a second. Hold on a second. You want to do the entire season, but you don't want to pick the Super Bowl?
Well, okay. Do we have to pick players again?
Yeah, where do we that? Get to? Where do we pick the Daytona 500?
Mary, don't worry. You'll
there's
pick
hardly anyone left.
You'll pick the right team, the right score, and you'll still come in last. So don't
that's
worry about
true.
It.
Yeah. Well, no, she's on my team, so maybe not.
Yeah.
Paul Conrad right. is allegedly prepared for us to come to him next. Mom, any final thoughts?
Oh, you've got some anger management problems there. No, you need help.
No, listen, it's mostly Andrea and Dave.
I'm calling the scoring alternative fact-checking now.
I'm just, listen, all I'm saying is if something bad happens to Sandberg, you're going to be suspect number one.
Hey, I'm okay with that. Again, it's an alternative fact.
And then you and Madonna can get back to blowing up the White House. all right, Mom, love you.
Love you. Have a good week, guys.
Bye-bye. See ya.
Yeah, bye, Ann.
Your mom's the
bye,
best.
Ann.
Yeah. What's your problem with my mom?
No, I love your mom.
She's the voice of reason.
Yeah. She's trying to love be the grown-up in the
she's
room.
She's great. Love your mom.
How is it you're not happy for me winning?
I am so happy
oh,
for
no,
you.
No,
no, I totally
we'll come back
am.
With Paul Conrad standing by on the set at WGN-TV, and that's a shock. We'll get to him in just a second on 720 WGN. We're going to go to Paul Conrad now, live from the set of Channel 9. And honestly, along with being one of my great friends in life, which is, you know, I'm blessed to have Paul as a friend, this is a great break for him because, you know, you do 4 hours with people. I mean, by 9 o'clock, the last people he wants to see is Larry and Robin and
yes.
Toomey and everybody else
right.
over there. You're just done with them.
Spot on.
So this is a break for you.
It is a big break. And it's nice to talk with positive, happy people.
Yes, that's who we are.
Yeah,
and positive and happy, as my mother yeah. pointed out just moments ago.
Yeah, the old fake mom thing. I love that you're still using that. It's a great little bit.
You know that Paul has never believed that that's my mom, ever. He thinks it's an actress we hired here
in
town.
It's a little too convenient, is just what I'm saying.
How was your weekend? Were you in the Women's March?
I did not make it to the Women's March. I did march around the house. A couple of times.
In solidarity?
No, just wanted to get things stretched out a little bit.
Okay.
We all missed right. you. We were looking for you, Paul.
Yeah, no, sorry. I was not able to get there. I had a busy weekend, actually. I had a lot of nice things going on.
What do you mean? What'd you do?
Well, you know, Friday night, my son had a little baseball. You know, baseball's back, so the training begins.
Oh, this is indoor stuff.
Yeah, indoor.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Saturday.
Where are they playing baseball indoors?
In the city here. There's a place called Bash where he was Friday night, so that was fun.
They have an indoor diamond?
It's not a full diamond, no. It's a kind of a just a big enough space where they can play.
What kind of crap are you teaching this kid?
Well, you know the basics.
Right, okay.
Chewing.
All right, and Saturday?
Saturday, I took my son out. He got a drone for Christmas.
Oh, boy.
So we flew that thing around. That was fun.
In the city?
Yeah.
You know, it's
more
illegal.
Exciting that way.
Yeah, you know, it's illegal.
Yeah, it's illegal. But listen, we had a nice. I don't think it's completely
illegal. Was this Klaus?
Illegal. Yeah.
What do you mean it's not completely illegal? It's either illegal or it isn't.
Well, okay, it's not illegal then.
So did you go up to the roof of your building?
No, we were in our parking lot, and then across the street we got it out. The little
How big is the drone? Because, you know, in the new world of Donald Trump, size matters.
Yeah, it's probably 18 inches, something like that.
Okay. Does
big
it
enough it'll cause some trouble.
Take some pictures?
He did, yeah. It's a stressful thing. It's very stressful. It's
a friend of mine had a commercial drone, $4,000.
Yeah.
Flew it into the side of a building.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You don't want that.
No. Yeah. He is very comfortable with it. I'm completely stressed out. So it's not a good combination. So
you had baseball, then you had drones. What'd you do yesterday?
Yeah, well, hold on. Let me finish. Oh. And then it was so nice Saturday, I got the whole family outside.
Said, and then lock the door?
Everyone get out there. And
you stayed in the apartment and locked the door?
Right. Had a couple hours to myself, which was finally nice. Did a little bicycle riding. I didn't ride the bicycles, but played, you know, just nice. It was nice to be outside.
So you had a great family weekend.
Yeah, really nice.
Yeah.
And then let me just finish up. I know because people think I live such an exciting lifestyle.
Well, you can tell by this story.
I touched up a little bit of paint in my house also.
Wait, you painted the walls a couple of weeks ago.
I know. Well, I only made it through halfway through the house, so now I finished the last half, and I'm done.
You think about the glamorous weekend. I mean, a lot of people think, how does a TV star like Paul Conrad, a multimedia star like Paul Conrad, how does he spend his weekend? He spends it at Bash, the indoor baseball place, and then outside with his son's drone, worrying like a Jewish mother from the North Shore.
Right.
And then yesterday, touching up the paint at the house.
And really cleaned the baseboards up nicely also. You would like to see how nicely those look.
And I thought Trump had a weekend.
Yeah. It was pretty exciting, right?
Yeah, that's great.
I live a very glamorous life.
Yeah, you do. There's no question. All right. Now, I understand you have to go back on TV now?
Yeah, supposedly. I'm willing to let this thing ride out a little bit. To be honest with you, this is more entertaining than what... We're like,
well, Andrea covered the march for Channel 9 on Saturday.
How'd you do?
It was great. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Great team coverage.
Oh, good.
And what was your favorite sign you saw?
The one I can say on the air?
That you can say.
I did like the Free Melania sign.
Free Melania is pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
One and another said, let's talk about the elephant in the womb.
Okay, all right.
That's about as much as I can say right
now. There was an actor, and I can't remember who, but he was carrying around a sign that said, we shall overcome.
Get it? Mm-hmm.
Not so bad. Paul and I like
not
that because we don't have hair.
Yeah, not bad at all.
All right, buddy, I can't help you any longer.
Okay, all my love.
No, here, give me a hug. Come here. Get over here.
Oh, hands higher, please.
Hey, we're both on TV, so reach in. Reach in. Here you go. There you go.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. Nicely done. That's our friend Paul Conrad
from
Channel 9.
All my love.
Good segment. Good hair, as we say in the business.
I'll come with something bigger next week.
No. I don't know how you could beat it. Back after this on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
.945, we continue, and my friend Jennifer Weigel is here. Nice to see you. You look great as always.
Thank you. Great to see you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And we're on CLTV as well, so thanks to CLTV for that. All right, Bill and Wendy will be here shortly, but before they get here, I'd like to know what you're up to now.
Well, as you know, I do a series at the Wilmette Theater. I'm kind of there all the time, right? We've got a bunk bed in the back, so I can just sleep over.
It's called the Weigel Theater.
The Weigel Theater. I love the Wilmette Theater. They've been really wonderful with the conversations
that
I've been
having.
Yeah, great people over there. And we have conversations with Weigel once a month. And this Thursday, I've got the Bodine family. So this is a family from Minnesota.
Do they know the Cooters?
Yeah, they might. Now, this isn't the band, the Bodines. A lot of people called and said, hey, I want to come and see the band. It's not that band.
Okay.
This is the world's most psychic family, apparently.
The entire family is psychic?
Yeah. 150 years goes back in the family, blah, blah, blah. But these folks haven't really left Minnesota as a team. And this is the first time they've been to Chicago as a trio. It's two sisters and a brother. And I'm really excited because Echo Bodine's written 11 books. Michael Bodine's written one. It's a bestseller. Growing up psychic, and then Nikki Bodine, the other sister, didn't come into her gifts until she was in her 40s. So it's kind of a really
how does that work?
Story.
I mean, you can't keep anything from your family. Everybody knows what's going on, right?
Exactly. And they tattle on each other. It's really kooky, the stories. As you know, I've been sort of investigating the paranormal ever since my dad died of a brain tumor. And
written a few books yourself.
Yeah, and my fourth book is coming out in about a month.
Wow. How about a hand for that?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Awesome.
What's it called?
It's called Psychics, Mediums, and Healers, A Journalist, A Road Trip, and Voices from the Other Side.
That's very cool. I would consider calling it Harry Potter, The Untold Story.
But yeah. No, I went across the country from Totowa, New Jersey, all the way to L.A. and stopped a lot of places in between to investigate people in this space and compiled the research in this book. And
that's a cool idea.
Yeah, it was very cool. But one of my favorite finds on this trek was the Bodine family in Minnesota. So I've been bugging them.
I lived up there for 5 years. I never heard of them. Where, really? What's their story?
Okay, well, they lived in the suburbs of Minnesota. Their mom,
suburbs of Minneapolis?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, like Edina, was it Bloomfield? Bloomington?
Bloomington.
Yeah, yeah. Bloomington. Yeah, yeah. And then in
Edina's
Minneapolis.
Edina's very nice. Nice
Edina,
suburb.
Yeah. Every Day I Need Attention is the acronym I've been told.
Yep, yep.
Anyway, their mother, Mae Bodine, you know, in her 40s, one day just...
Well, they sound like hicks. What are they doing living in a fancy suburb? Is this like the Clampets?
They're very middle class.
Oh, they are.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Just because Edina has fancy pants, you know, they've been living in the same house for 35 years.
Well, no, but it's like Ellie Mae and Jed and all of that. So.
No, they're super.
But these are just regular blue collar.
Regular,
folks.
Yeah, regular blue collar folks who haven't wanted to leave Minnesota and go do the LA thing. They've had many offers to do that.
Okay.
I think they'd make a great reality show. So I'm trying to convince them to broaden that. So we're in the process of shooting and producing that. So just getting them out of their comfort zone, out of Minnesota, and here to Chicago.
They've never been to Chicago?
As a family, no.
Okay.
The three of them. I mean, Echo has, I don't think she's been here in decades. Michael's been here maybe once or twice. Nikki, I don't know. She came in September. I got her to come to the Wilmette Theater. So, you know, it's really neat to have the three of them.
Why did they name her Echo?
Echo? I don't know, but it's her God-given name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Echoes of the Soul is one of her best-selling
books. She's got one of those speakers, the Echo thing. You know?
Exactly. She has a theme music that follows behind her. So Thursday night at the Wilmette Theater, there are still tickets available.
How do you get them?
Just go to jenweigel.com and click on gigs, or you can go to the wilmettheater.com.
Somebody was talking about hypnosis the other day.
Yeah.
Where are you on hypnosis?
You know what? When I was blessed to be your news person many years ago.
Blessed, please. Cursed.
Come on. It was the best experience ever. And we had a hypnosis guy.
Hypnotist, yeah.
He came in and tried to hypnotize everybody.
He hypnotized me.
He did.
Yeah.
And did it work?
It seemed to work.
Were you really hypnotized?
You know that state of sleep you get into where you feel like you know what's going on, but you're asleep?
Just chill out.
You know, you hear things and stuff, but then... You become more alert. You look at the clock, and somehow it's been 2 hours.
Right.
It was that kind of. Well, it's like twilight anesthesia. It was that kind of that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
I don't think I acted like a chicken or anything, but you know, I mean, it could have been
that you know.
You know what I think is more powerful than hypnosis for me personally are people that kind of go back and tell you about quote past lives, which is technically there's no past or present. It's all happening at once, according to science. Right. So it's like the universe is separated by shower curtains. So it's all happening at one time.
I'd like to have that system.
Don't you get the feeling? And I mean, I loved you after my father passed away. You gave me your first and your second book. Oh my God, it was really just life changing. It's so good and it's so
make you cry, make you laugh.
Spiritual Damage, which is now
a podcast
here. Yeah,
it's fantastic. But don't you? I mean, there's something to the fact of where you walk past something. Say you're in a different city and you're like, I've been here before. Yeah, I know.
That happened to me in Rome. I'm not kidding. I was on my honeymoon. Remember, I got my first marriage out of the way, and so I was walking by the Spanish Steps, and I knew I'd been there before, and I knew if I turned left, I would see this fountain and that. How do you explain that?
You can't explain it.
You can't explain it, except to say
but
maybe.
But how do you know, because I'm not a skeptic about this stuff, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
But how do you know when somebody's full of it?
Oh, I've met a lot of them, and that's the thing. There are some people, I think everybody's intuitive. Everybody. Dave's intuitive. Mary's intuitive.
Well, Dave's
not
intuitive.
Ross. You know, all your grandkids, whatever. Dave is definitely intuitive. We all
are. Thank you, Jen.
We have that inner, you know, even Conrad Hilton called it the Hilty Hunch. You know, we all have a gut check on things, but we discount it and say it's woo-woo or weird. But for so many years and thousands of years, that compass was considered a necessity. And for generations, actually, the medicine man, even with Native Americans, that was considered important stuff.
The cooter.
And
No. Yeah, medicine man
we
cooter.
Discount it and we just chalk it up to being weird or strange if we can't label it medical or sell a pill for it.
If there, because this happens a lot,
mm-hmm.
people go, it's so weird. I was thinking of that song and then the song came on the radio.
That's your intuition.
What's the difference between intuition and being a seer?
Well, I think there's a seer, that's clairvoyance. So you're viewing something, right?
Okay.
Some people are clairvoyant, some people are clairaudient, I'll give you all the clairs, honey.
But intuition is intuition an underdeveloped thing? Like if we're all intuitive, we just don't do anything with it?
Yeah. Echo Bodine wrote this great book called A Still Small Voice, where it teaches you about building up that muscle. It's like going to the gym.
Sure.
You can't just suddenly decide you're going to run a marathon without running lots of miles.
You can't just shoot a half-court shot if you haven't played hoops in
a couple of years. There you go. Yeah. You know that? Or throw a football at Northwestern. So basically...
Oh, boy. All of my nightmares coming
back. You got to practice. Yeah. And so it's like building up a muscle. So if you start slow, just think before, you know, say the phone vibrates, just get silent and go, I wonder who's texting me. And the first thought that comes to your mind before your ego gets involved is usually the right one. That's what I tell people. It's like when a plane shoots by so fast you barely look up. That's what your intuition is. Your ego thinks about it too long. You overprocess. You get in your head. Then you start getting logical. That's what messes up all of our intuition.
All right, last question. And these are just general questions that I know people have.
Yes.
If someone is supremely intuitive, why don't they go to Vegas and beat the casino?
Because sometimes it's not for their highest good to win all that money in Vegas. We don't know what their challenges are. We don't know what their sole purpose is. Some people need to suffer to really enjoy
what comes. But if you have
that
skill, are you self-blocking at that point for some reason based on your life's experiences?
Well, over the decades, I've interviewed a lot of people in this space, and they can't read their friends, their children, because if it's too much of an emotional connection, you cloud it. So it's obviously easier to kind of read a total stranger than it is the people that you love. So if you're really emotionally invested, then chances are it's not going
to there's
no
purity to figuring out what card's coming next, I suppose.
Correct. But some people do win the lottery based on their intuition because that's what's meant to happen for them. And then it either changes their life for the better or it ruins their life. We've all heard those stories,
right? I just always play the number two. And I go, we're going to need more numbers.
Right. Yeah. Jen, are signs part of intuition? You know, people look for certain signs, maybe a loved one in passing.
Supposedly they can send us signs and signals all the time. You know, I've interviewed a lot of people who've died and lived to talk about it, near-death experiences. And they talk about that up there, they're literally trying to send us signals. And if we ignore them, they get so frustrated. Imagine if you're trying to call someone back in the day before there was a cell phone and it was busy, 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 and you couldn't get through. After a while, you'd give up. So you have to acknowledge them when they show up.
You remember busy signals? You old enough to remember busy signals?
I do remember
signals. Before there was the call waitings?
We'd get excited when you had a message on the answering machine.
Big day.
Caller ID was huge.
Big day.
Changed my life.
Yeah, now I don't have the energy to check my messages.
Oh.
All right, Wilmette Theater.
Wilmette Theater, Thursday night, 7 p.m. And once a month, we've got lots of shows coming up. I've got an animal communicator coming in March, Cindy Myers. I find them all, Steve. We look under the rocks, we find all of them.
We should have the animal communicator come in and see if they know what Steve Dale's talking about.
Oh, my gosh, that would be hilarious. Yeah, yeah, you know what? Yeah. I had a cat that went missing. She told me what happened to him. True.
Go cats.
Back with Bill and Wendy coming up.
Wait, what?
Where do we follow you on social media?
JenWeigel.com, at Jen Weigel, Jennifer Weigel on Facebook, because the name has two Fs.
Two Fs. Thanks, Mom.
All right.
Thanks, Obama. And Bill and Wendy are next.